Push on a pedal, push on a pedal, get ya hot started. Push on a pedal, push it down and up again. Push on a pedal, push on a pedal, get ya hot started. Push on a pedal, push it down and up again. Get on your bike, sit on the seat, push your feet on the pedal, and ride it all around, ride it all around. Get on your bike, sit on the seat, push your feet on the pedal, and ride it all around, ride it all around.
Let's get a little panel of guests together here, and who wants to talk about our first issue, which is we were at the LABAC. We don't have anybody here from the LABAC, but somebody is giving a thumbs up. Steve is giving a thumbs up to the LABAC. Oh, sorry, did I blow your... And why do we give a thumbs up to the LABAC?
What is the LABAC?
What?
What is it?
You're saying what is the LABAC?
What is BAC?
You got to really be loud because this is my computer mic.
Bicycle Advisory Coalition, right?
What is it? What is the LABAC?
I'm going to talk right in your computer.
Okay, let's say who's here, okay?
We this got is Alex Kenefick.
And
the LABAC, the Los Angeles Bicycle Advisory Committee, was started by Mayor Tom Bradley.
Do you want me to move my leg?
Is this comfortable? No, no, leave okay. Your leg there. Started by Mayor Tom Bradley, and it's a long-running committee that has always discussed bicycle issues as part of the city. Like, as far as, like, you know, like, the city of L.A. has an opinion on bicycle issues, and it's going to go through L.A. Bicycle Advisory Committee. But it's not necessarily, like, on behalf of the region or, I don't know, does anybody want to jump in and help clarify my definition? I think that's on the right track, but...
Steve, you have a thought? This Steve? You
no,
got two Steve?
So,
are you saying that they kind of represent the city, or no?
Well, I would think that they help to determine bicycle policy for the city of L.A.
So, we were at their meeting, and there was a lot of talk about things like sharrows, which are these chevrons, the series of arrows with a bike in the middle. And they seem to be having to do a lot of studies about whether, you know, the paint is going to be okay to put on the road or... You know,
I'm glad that they started studying that because because I was wondering about all this other paint that was on the road. I just wanted to know if it was okay to put that paint on the road. And so it's good that they're starting with Sharrow's.
Yeah, there's a lot of frustration. A lot of frustration with the studies. Joe Linton called it, was like, you know, I'm tired of this bullshit. Which I thought was very, unprofessional. But at the same time, everybody liked it. So, so Sharrow's. And then there's some do-it-yourself Sharrow's that people do. Anybody know about that? Anybody heard of the do-it-yourself Sharrow's?
Captain Sharrow.
I've actually done it.
This is Gern from Bike Wave.
Yeah. I've seen it done, and I advocate it.
Uh-huh. Well, can you tell us what a do-it-yourself Sharrow is?
Well, I think the best one to do is linoleum, and you can roll it up and roll away easily.
So you're talking about a stencil that's made of linoleum.
And what kind of paint do you use?
Well, the paints, there's a lot of contention about paints. Spray cans are obviously the quickest and easiest if you're going to be going with, and they dry the quickest. If you're going to go with something like a can paint, then it's going to have to take a little bit more time to dry. I like the spray paint.
What does the city use, that big, thick stuff that has like a little bit of reflective stuff in it?
That stuff is so ungodly expensive, it has to be obtained other than paying for it.
Really?
Isn't that really big, thick stuff like something that you actually heat on to the roadway or something? It's not even a paint. And I heard that it's almost like more like a decal.
Yeah.
And then it just infuses.
It dries very quickly.
It dries.
They sprinkle a reflective sand-like thing in it.
Louder.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's something almost different than paint, but it dries almost immediately and they sprinkle reflective sand on it.
Reflective sand.
Magic sand,
Morgan says.
That stuff would be nice to get a hold of. Might be worth trying to bribe a couple Caltrans workers out on the street one day.
So, Gern, where would you come up with like the equipment? And isn't there a stencil like that? A huge stencil? I mean, how big is that stencil for a bike?
It seems like it's about 3 feet wide, maybe about 3 feet. In San Francisco, they're very prominent, and I've ridden up there and enjoy it tremendously. And I think the program works. It's usually pretty much a given when these people are seeing it. I think that the city of San Francisco, I think it's pretty well established, and that there's really a good support for it. They're only about 3 feet wide by 3 feet tall, so it's not really that hard to do.
I think also, I don't know if anybody mentioned this already, but I think one of the exciting things about Sharrow's that's happened over the summer is that I think that Caltrans recognized the Sharrow. So before this summer, cities were putting out Sharrow's, you know, the cool ones, were putting out Sharrow's, and they were, you know, putting them out there, and it's not necessarily a recognized marking. And I think sometime over the summer, Caltrans recognized it as an official roadway marking. So that actually just paves the way for cities all over to be able to do Sharrow's, and it's not another hurdle. I think that it's a really exciting move, and maybe something from our California Bicycle Coalition advocates, to thank them for.
Mm-hmm. Is that, that's you, right?
No.
Oh. Who's the Bicycle Coalition? Advocates.
I'm here on behalf of the LA County Bicycle Coalition. Do you want me to?
Yeah, I don't know if you're... Is it coming up sound-wise?
You're not getting it?
See, no, because, like, I was putting my face right next to this computer. Like, I have the closest face to this computer, so I was thinking, like, you know, it's all good. I don't know where the mic is, though.
I think it's somewhere around here.
Oh, it's on the top of the screen. Mm-hmm. Okay, I was coming in from the bottom end. I didn't know if that works. Anyway, sorry. I feel like I'm controlling the... I'm going to keep going. I'm here on behalf of the LA County Bicycle Coalition. I'm Alex Kenefick, and... I'm the president of the board of the directors of the LA County Bicycle Coalition.
Alex, you were talking about advocates throughout California. Do you guys have much contact with any of the other local coalitions?
You mean, okay. Well, we have members who have good contacts with them. I personally haven't built any contacts with, for example, San Francisco Bicycle Coalition, and then, you know, statewide other, you know, bike organizations. But we have a few other board members who are plugged in. Kent Strumpel would be one of them.
I know that recently there was a meeting of coalition heads down here. Is that right? But there was a meeting. There were some folks down here from Portland. I don't know.
It wasn't a Thunderhead.
It was a Thunderhead.
Oh, okay. Exactly. Like the Thunderhead Alliance is a alliance of bicycle coalitions. My understanding of it is that it's a pay for membership kind of. Like almost like a, if you could think of a industrial circle, let's say if we make paint for Sharrows, all the paint makers in the country would be on an industrial council, and that would be like a nonprofit. Well, this is the same thing, except for making paint, we're doing bike advocacy, and we are a member of the Thunderhead Alliance, and they did a training down here. I know they did one last year, and I think they've had other stuff. You know, I thought that the training the Thunderhead Alliance did down here was last year, but
you're probably right.
But they're great. They're a great advocacy organization. We sent Dorothy Le, our MTA project person, up to the bike convention in Seattle, and she got to go to a Thunderhead training for like a week there.
Is there anything that we could do to help out the LACBC as just average riders?
Well, you know, I guess if I'm going to make my pitch, I'm going to go all in. I join the LACBC. Short of that, you can be on our email blast, which helps us because we get more response for volunteers. Right now we have, I think the latest count was 6,000 people on our email blast. It's nothing compared to, and remember, you know, we try to represent all different kinds of bicycles. So I'm going to bring up a road riding club. I think someone told me that Velo Club Le Grange has like 10 or 15,000 members, or you know, they mentioned another, you know, so we're not a huge listserv, but it enables us to put out an email blast about, for example, like the Mandeville Canyon incident, and or maybe we put something out about an attack on Biona Creek. You know, we've done that before. Of course, other people are also doing that. There's more than one place to get your news and information. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to duplicate all of that. We're not trying to replace anyone's blog or anything, but we are trying to aggregate a lot of the information, you know.
Now, you guys also, on your email blasts, you also talk about some of the rides that you guys helped to sponsor, including, like, the L.A. River Ride.
Yeah. Well, you know, the L.A. River Ride is, I mean, if I'm just going to take this from the perspective of if you're new to the L.A. Bicycle Coalition, the L.A. River Ride is really different from a Midnight Riders ride or something. I'm imagining a lot of killradio.org. Listeners might be more familiar with Midnight Riders than they would be, or Bike Boom, than they would be with the L.A. County Bike Coalition. So the L.A. River Ride is our main fundraiser. That's pretty much what it does. That plus memberships, they comprise a really big chunk of what pays our... We have four staff right now. Two of them are part-time. Two of them are full-time. We have a couple restricted grants that, for example, Dorothy pulls off of an MTA grant to design transit stations in low-income communities to have better bike and pedestrian access. You know, on top of that, she ends up doing a lot of extra general work. But anyway, back to the rides. We have the LA River Ride. That's an annual ride. It's in June, and it's up and down the LA River. We had a century this first time. This last year in 2008. We have a 35-mile ride, a 5-mile family ride, and the whole LA River Ride is I think it's about 65 or 70 miles. It's basically from Griffith Park down where the river trail begins, up near the Western Heritage Museum, near where the 5 and the 134 are, all the way down to Long Beach and back. And it goes on almost all of the bike trail that we currently have. And then, of course, there's a huge gap in downtown L.A., and it goes down to Long Beach and back. We have other rides, including the Ice Cream Social Ride, which has been in the past a very big fundraiser. This last year I was in charge of it, and it earned us $25. But we changed it up a little bit, and I'm still going to try and have control of it, because the Ice Cream Social Rides, or the Ice Cream Sunday Rides, used to be on a Sunday. It was a family ride. It was $10, you know, maybe $5 for members. And then we'd go to a lot of really awesome ice cream shops around L.A. For example, Ice Kiss Cafe, right. Scoops. Well, this time we had such a good experience partnering with the city of Maywood and a lot of other what you might call gap area cities along the lower L.A. River bike trail. We wanted to kind of do a bike ride there. And so we decided to do a really small one just in Maywood, and we went to three Paleteria and Nieve shops. So Paleta, you might have heard the popular reggaeton song, Paletero Man. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
That means ice cream man?
Yeah, well, it means ice cream man, because it's Paletero is ice cream. But anyway, man. But a paleta is a really awesome popsicle. Sometimes they have bubble gum in them. Sometimes they have fruit in them. They're really tasty. They're usually made right in the store. It's not like something that's made at a factory. And nieves are like almost like ices or sherbets or sorbets. Some of them have cream in them. Some of them have just no cream and just water and sugar. And we went around there in Maywood, and We had a good time. We didn't get enough people from Maywood, and so I guess the next time we do that, I want to just do it again in Maywood and try to get more people in Maywood to do it, because we want to try to figure out ways to branch out to all of the bicycling community. Right now, we've got certain people on representing us right now. We're represented by certain kinds of bicycles right now at the LA County Bicycle Coalition, and we know that there's more kinds of bicycles out there. And we want to get it into this perspective where everybody's got this forum, and maybe we don't always get along, but we can kind of come to some conclusion or goal about bicycles.
So before we get off the topic of rides, though, I do know that you guys have the Midnight Express ride, the makeup ride,
yes,
coming up soon.
Yeah, and I'm not going to go on it, but I'm. But yeah, we had a Midnight Express ride. This is the most exciting ride of the year, actually. I don't know why I didn't mention it until now. sorry. Basically, we had it in mid-November, and then that was right when the huge fires were happening. And the ride not only requires a Metrolink ride on the way back, but and those tracks were like on fire during that time. And the smoke was bad, and they had to cancel the Pasadena Marathon, and so our small bike ride we had to cancel it, because we wanted people to actually have a good time and not have to hack up along. The ride route goes from, so it's coming up on next Saturday. What's the date? Do you know the
date? Next Saturday is December 13th.
December 13th. Registration closes on December 12th. It's called, the website is midnightexpressride.org, and the route is, you meet in Union Station downtown. It's a fully supported ride. It's actually designed for people who want to do a road ride, but also want to be pampered a little bit. There's a hot breakfast at the end. You begin Union Station downtown. You immediately go uphill along the Arroyo, through Pasadena, up the Angels Crest Highway, through the frickin' mountains, almost all the way to Palmdale. We're going to stop short of Palmdale. We're going to stop at the Acton Vincent Grade Metrolink station. And you'll be getting in there kind of early in the morning. And there will be hot breakfast. And there's a Metrolink ride back. It's $50. Am I forgetting anything?
No, I think you just... Oh, what time does it start?
Oh, it starts at... This is the awesome part. It starts at midnight. I believe that if you register, you go on the website, you'll find out you need to maybe show up a little bit before midnight or something. It's run by our illustrious board member, Alex and Mary.
And he is extremely exacting, and he will probably leave right on time, and you know, so like, it's $50. It's on the web, and it's a fundraiser, and we're hoping to make a good chunk of change for it, for bicycle advocacy.
Is it possible for us to just show up and help support?
Yes. I think Alex is still looking for volunteers. I mean, he went around and he secured a lot of volunteers to either ride with it or to drive a thing. It looks like somebody's pantomiming. We might need to have like a drunken rider truck driver. That was I saw the beer drinking and then the large steering wheel move. Like, yeah.
Mustache bars.
So mustache bars. but yeah, we might need somebody to drive a rider truck around because Metrolink, you know, they have two bikes. Sometimes you have a nice conductor, four bikes per car. There's probably going to be two or three cars on that train. We're going to have 50 riders. We're going to have a rider truck taking bikes down. People help make breakfast. People help along the way pass out, you know, high protein enduro snacks. So we need a lot of volunteers. We're paying for an EMT. To follow along in case disaster strikes.
Well, I think probably, hopefully, there will be no disaster whatsoever. So, but that's it sounds like an exciting ride with a lot of climbing. I think 6,000 feet, right?
6,000 feet of elevation. That sounds right.
Yeah. So
I'm going to be at home. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. I'm actually going to be volunteering. I'm going to drive one of the rider trucks. But
So, Alex, what do you do with the LACBC, and what do you do outside of the LACBC?
I started volunteering for the LACBC surrounding the election in 2006. We had a board election in 2006, and then employee Monica Howe had kind of dragged me into this thing where we were going around everybody who was cool that we knew, and we wanted to get them on the board of the LACBC. At that time, there was some concern about LACBC not really having a lot of representation for the kind of bicyclists that Monica and I were, which is, I don't know what you'd call it. I consider
urban
myself
cyclist?
Yeah, I hate that word though. Oh. Urban cyclist. I would call myself a sustenance cyclist. Like, I mean, I do really like to ride my bike, and I ride my bike. You know, I have owned a car at times. I don't own one now, but I have owned a car. And, you know, like, I want to be the most pragmatic kind of urban cyclist. When I'm called an urban cyclist, I don't want to be like somebody envision me wearing like hip hugger jeans and the really nice bag and I tried to ride a fixed gear for a while. It didn't work out for me, you know?
Yeah, well, that doesn't really... Like, urban cyclists, we think about commuters, we think about...
But I'm not as cool as an urban cyclist. Like, I'm putting quotes around that. Like, I want to make sure that people know that
you're saying hipster.
I am not as cool as an urban cyclist.
You're not an urban.
Oh, but I'm kind of a hipster. I feel like if I'm not too old to be a hipster, I definitely am one.
No, I don't think
if I am
possible.
Too old... Okay, well... But yeah, no. So we started, you know, getting involved, and then at some point, Stephen Box, who was on the board at the time, had asked me if I wanted to be nominated to be on the board. I ran for the election. I ran for the board too. I did not make it in. And then Stephen Box asked me if I wanted to be nominated because we had an extra seat, and I said yeah. And that was in 2007. I came onto the board, and we lost a lot of board members right after that, hopefully not as a result of that. And in March of 2008, we had another board election where the membership was allowed to vote on the board members, and I decided to go for president. Of course, the board elects the president, and they said, okay, you could be the president of the board, and so that's what I'm doing now. And so basically my role at the LACBC is to try and guide the ship. Ron Milam, who was on last week, I think, who had just won Cranksgiving, he was an executive director and one of the founding fathers of the LACBC, of the LA County Bike Coalition, and he has actually done a strategic retreat for us last year, and my job is to try and implement that and get people to write out they're part of the strategic retreat, so you know they're part of our strategic plan, so we can get organized, and so as a board we can speak on behalf of all the bicyclists that we can.
Really quick here, you guys, and over the past couple of weeks we've done a lot of talk about advocacy, about meetings with the city. We've had members of the LA Bicycle Advisory Committee on the show. You guys actually work kind of hand in hand with them, I'm guessing, and as well with the maybe with the master plan that we've heard a lot of talk about.
Well, that's really the city of LA's baby. We've offered planning support and any kind of assistance that they want. They're really driving on that. I don't know if I could say we work hand in hand with the LA County Bicycle Advisory Committee, but it seems like I really prefer to say that we have an interplay. We have a member who's on both.
Okay,
That's Kent Strumpel. He brings a lot of planning issues up. He has a long planning report during every board meeting. By the way, the LA County Bike Coalition board meetings are public. You can visit la-bike.org and find out the list of the board meetings, find a number to call people up on. I wouldn't say that we're did you say we were partners? I don't think that we're partners. I think that because, you know, we represent all of LA County.
Yeah.
And LA Bicycle Advisory Committee is just city of LA. It's very council district and mayoral oriented. That's one structure. The way that I look at it is that the Bicycle Advisory Committee, whether they like it or not, is one of our stakeholders. We're looking at LA County as a whole region. There's a lot of bicycle stuff going on. Bicycle Advisory Committee is one of our stakeholders. Each member of the Bicycle Advisory Committee and the way that they ride in LA County, however they ride, they're a stakeholder also. Anyone who's been on more than one Midnight Ride-Us might be a stakeholder, because depending on what they're getting out of it, if they're really identifying with biking in LA, they're a stakeholder, if they're feeling it. Personally, I got into cycling in LA. I'd almost divorced myself from my bike. I grew up in Davis, California, bike town. I almost divorced myself from my bike. I was, living on the west side and driving to USC and going to school and stuff. And then I started, my friends started introducing me to the bicycle kitchen, and I started trying to fix my bike there badly at the bicycle kitchen. And then I started fixing it more and more and more. And I got a little better. That's where I'm at now. I'm a little better. But then I started going on Midnight Riders, and that's when I became a real bicycle stakeholder. I felt like, man, I got to get on that bike. And I started preferring taking my bike instead of driving.
We can maybe take calls, questions for you. And then 310-428-4222 is my cell phone number. But if you're listening past December 6th, then that's going to be obsolete. But 310-428-4222 for Alex Kinefic. So we got to wait for the 10-second delay.
Also, we're broadcasting live today from the Biker Wave out in Santa Monica, and we've got a whole slew of Biker Wave volunteers with us here. So we talked a little bit about the bicycle kitchen. The Biker Wave is basically the West Side's answer to do-it-yourself bike maintenance, and they do have a huge crew of volunteers here. I think they could always use more. Let's get somebody in from the Bike Wave here. Anybody want to talk?
Sure.
Yeah, come on up.
Okay. Steve, can you introduce yourself here real quick and tell us a little bit about what the Bike Wave is and what the mission is?
Yeah, well, my name's Steve Mattson. I'm the general manager of the Biker Wave. And the Biker Wave is, like you said, a DIY, do-it-yourself bike repair shop. We sell some used bikes occasionally. We've got a lot of used parts. We've got tools. We've got relatively intelligent mechanics that can help people out. And if we can't do it directly, we have access to the internet so we can look stuff up. And then we also sell some new parts like inner tubes and brake stuff and cables and things like that.
So I'm an average rider. I replace my group set once a year, twice a year on my high-end racing bike. I've got all these parts laying around, and I'm looking for a place to take them. Would this be the place?
Bike Wave would be a wonderful place to bring that stuff because we can always put it to use. We have lots of people that come in that are looking for, you know, they've converted a bike from, say, a 10-speed, a vintage 10-speed, and they want to turn it into a fixed gear or a single speed. So we need different kinds of brakes. We love wheels. 700C wheels are very popular. Good condition used tires are also kind of... No more mountain bike tires, though. We recently had sort of a giveaway program. Gave away a lot of our mountain bike tires. We don't get a lot of mountain bikes in here, ironically enough, even though we're close to the Santa Monica Mountains. I'd say our bread and butter is single speeds, fixies, conversions, 10 speeds, things like that.
How are you guys doing on your volunteer corps? Is that something that I could do if I was interested?
Absolutely, yeah. As far as volunteering right now, we seem to be fairly well staffed. I think that's the consensus. We've got a number of people kind of in our back pocket who are interested in coming in as well for the nights and the day that we're open. There's always talk about expanding our open hours, possibly opening up on Tuesday. Currently, we're open Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday evening from 6:30 to 10, and on Saturdays from 1 o'clock till 7 o'clock. And we'd like to expand, but currently, with our volunteer body, this is our hours.
Do you guys do any classes, any specific classes, or do you have a website where I could check you guys out?
Yes, we do have a website. It's www.bikerwave.org, and we're getting better at updating it on a weekly basis. From there, you can check out our forum. You can access our forum, and you can see more of what's going on in the Biker Wave and what dialogue is going on. We've got a volunteer meeting coming up this Sunday, so hopefully any volunteers out there listening will be attending. What else? There was something else in there.
Classes.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I completely avoided that topic.
You hosted our first class.
I did. We recently, I want to say recently, this fall we did a How to Fix a Flat workshop. And, you know, it wasn't a huge turnout, but we would like to be doing more stuff like that. I think it'd be great to do some workshops on how to find a bike that fits, how to find a bike that is a suitable choice for doing a bike conversion, since that seems to be such a popular form of transportation around here. And when I say conversion from a 10-speed to a fixed gear, and fitting, too. We see a lot of people that come in that probably have the wrong size bike, and there's a challenge in that.
So over the past couple of years, I've noticed that there are a lot of rides that are starting up here on the west side. How much do you think that you guys have to do with that? And is this operation really community-based?
I think that's a great question. I think we'd have to ask the community more if we're really community-based. I think one of the initial founders of the Biker Wave, Alex Thompson, is a strong advocate on the west side for better relations with, say, the city of Santa Monica regarding bicycles. And he and a number of other people host a lot of incredibly popular rides on the west side. And we want to become more part of the community. It feels like there's been a little step away from the bike community of late. And I think the Biker Wave kind of started out, and I wasn't part of it then, but I get the sense it started out with more. And Gern, maybe you'd want to chime in on this. The Biker Wave started out with a little bit more of a clubhouse feel. And I think it's we've sort of become more organized, and in the process, we may have sort of spun out a few people. And I understand that's not always unusual in the bike co-op community. I know that Bike Kitchen had their challenges with that as well. But we're trying to draw people back in the community. And I don't think we've lost them necessarily, but I don't think we're currently the biggest hub of that.
So, Steve, you're sitting here with Gern. Gern, would you like to introduce yourself and say a few words?
Hi, my name is Gern Trowbridge, and I'm a member here at the Bikerwave. And, yes, we're definitely community-based. We started with, about 13 or 14 people being brought together by a handful of riders to start the co-op, and I think it's a wonderful thing. I'm one of the very few mountain bikers over here, and we've got there are a few mountain bikers here on the west side, and one of them is Paul Bringetto, who's here, and I started doing some rides in Santa Monica, the Santa Monica Critical Mass, and that's where I met pretty much everybody who was brought together, that I think, for the original Biker Wave, of which Paul was a member, and it's been amazing. It totally blew me away to actually become, in this essence, the urban cyclist, whereas I was the classic, I wouldn't ride my bike in the streets.
Classic mountain biker.
Yeah.
Throw your bike in your truck, get up to the Solvang Canyon, go ride the trails.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Biker Wave basically evolved from Santa Monica Critical Mass. I remember the first shop we had over there on Pico, the Santa Monica Critical Mass was actually in at the old Biker Wave sometimes with huge parties that were a lot of fun, and that's kind of where it began.
Paul, that's a good point. Where are you guys located at now?
Located on Berkeley in Nebraska in Santa Monica, and I never can remember the address.
1816A, and it's between Nebraska and Olympic, between Sentinella and Stewart, and Berkeley Street is what actually follows through the property. It's kind of a weird thing. It's not a fully paved street. It's just south of Nebraska.
There's a sign in the parking lot that actually points to the shop itself. It's next to Tom's Shoes.
Yeah, we're in an alley. It's an old ceramics factory, I believe.
So you guys are talking about how this evolved from the Santa Monica Critical Mass. When did that start taking place? Not the necessarily the critical mass, but the evolution of the Biker Wave.
Was it 2 years ago? Approximately 2 years ago?
Yeah, at least. If I'm not mistaken, it seemed like it was within the same year that the Santa Monica Critical Mass started. So it seemed like it was about 6 or 8 months later.
Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly when Zach Yoli and Alex got together and actually went forward with the idea, but it was sometime around then.
So this is, we were talking earlier, this is a co-op, right?
Yes.
And as a member, the volunteers are members, or can I come in and become a member and work on my bike here and not have to volunteer?
Volunteers that put in the minimum requirement for volunteer hours are automatically members. Volunteers is pretty much the same thing. You can buy it as a $100 per year membership, and that gives you access to the rack and all the tools year-round.
I did notice that you guys had some bikes out here that look like they were borrowed, bikes that say borrow. I've got something out here with a rod drive and internally geared.
Oh, the shaft drive?
Shaft drive, yeah.
Yeah, I think that one's for sale, right?
Yes.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Someone built it here and donated it. And
a reporter did a story on it and did the build here and donated the bike back to us.
That's a pretty awesome little bike.
Mm-hmm. It's a fun bike. I've actually taken it on Crank Mob.
Yeah.
It's a blast.
What is Crank Mob?
What is Crank Mob? That's a hard question. It's hard to describe. It's a party ride. It's a party on wheels. It's on the first Saturday after the third Friday of every month. It starts at 10 o'clock on Sawtell and LaGrange. And it's whatever you want it to be. Just people just show up and do whatever they want on bicycles.
I've also noticed a lot of double-decker bikes floating
tall
around
bikes,
here.
Yeah.
Tall bikes. What are you guys making those here, or is is what's going on?
Yeah, occasionally we have a freak bike build day where basically we all get together and chop bikes up and weld them together in many different configurations. And we haven't had one in a while. It might be time to schedule another one.
Are those publicized?
We usually post them to the forum and then in the ride section.
I think we should start posting them on the main page, too.
Yes, definitely.
So, we got the website earlier. What is the website for the Biker Wave again?
It's www.bikerowave.org. Biker Wave spelled BIKEROWAVE.org.
All right. We've got a couple other folks around here that are just kind of taking pictures. Morgan, I met you earlier when I was pulling up. You came in on a pretty classic bike. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you have and what you have to say about the Biker Wave?
My name is Morgan Strauss. I'm a head mechanic on Saturday's 1 to 4 p.m. shift. And I am, maybe halfway between a sustenance cyclist and a urban cyclist. I do wear the hip hugger pants. But I don't know much about culture other than I'm a victim of bike culture and did save some money a while back and buy a fetish commodity, a 1972 Paramount track frame off of eBay. And just before it really skyrocketed and became hard to get your hands on one. So I feel lucky, but...
it's a gorgeous bike.
I like it. Originally, I was kind of bummed that it didn't have chrome lugs, but now I think it's a little bit more tasteful than some of those really shiny things out there. But that's not necessarily what the Biker Wave is about, because you can't always find one of those in here.
So what kind of bikes are we looking at in here? I see some interesting things. I see Raleigh Techniums, like a mountain bike. I've got some Nishikis that I'm looking at. A rock machine, yeah. Cannondale, Schwinn's. You kind of have a slew of stuff.
We definitely do. And the thing with the Biker Wave is you'll come in here and it can be deceiving. The ceiling is full of bikes, but maybe half of them are all project bikes. You'll come in. The first thing we ask you to do is take a look at all of them, and anything with a beige tag with a green piece of tape on it is for sale. And may have been slightly refurbished. And anything with a red tag is somebody's claimed project bike. And just say, you know, unfortunately, when there's a super nice one up there, it usually has a red tag.
So if I'm starting a project here, how long do you guys generally take to get a project done? And is that something that I can work on once a week for a month or 2 months? Or what's the deal with that?
Definitely. Every case is different. We do, what is it, Garen? What's the...
30 days.
30 days?
Well, yeah, basically the...
With leniency.
Yeah. We really don't, because of storage limitations, we don't want people to leave things here, but if there's a space available, then they're granted the space. Technically, you should not be leaving a bike here for any amount of time. But if it isn't worked on in a month, then you're going to start running into some trouble. But we haven't really had much problem with, I don't think, with space. A lot of people don't want to leave their stuff here, which is good. So I think it's been pretty well. We've definitely got a lot of projects here that we need to shake people up and get them back going. But we try to accommodate people with their needs. A lot of people can't lug a bike back and forth, especially when they're riding a bike. So there are people that have taken advantage of that and left projects here.
So you guys work with projects, brand new projects, and also with existing bikes that people ride. You guys, I also noticed you have some tubes and you do have some new parts. How good is your stock? Is it something where I need to call ahead and make sure that you guys will have what I need?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Our mission was to basically have a few things to keep you going, like tubes and...
stuff that you need to replace due to wear and tear.
Yeah,
the basics.
To stay away from the local bike shop competition. Now we've got about half a dozen importers and vendors, pardon me, that are basically we're going to be lining up and extending our ability to carry items. Whether or not a customer wants to come in and order from us or a member, we'll best basically be expanding. We currently have KHS as our distributor, and we're looking towards getting opening that up with an awful lot more.
Well, that's good to hear. That's awesome. We've been talking a little bit about Sharrows today. We have any opinions from the Biker Wave on that?
I love Sharrows. I'd like to see as many as possible. I don't think we have any on the west side, at least none that I've noticed. It'd be nice to see some pop up every once in a while.
Do you know where
I've seen a Sharrow around here? I think the nearest Sharrow to around here was I was on a ride going through the city of Corona.
Oh, wow.
And you got Sharrows all over the place. But just in Corona. And then you're on the, then you're out of there.
Mm-hmm.
The appealing thing to me about a Sharrow is, I mean, as a bicyclist, it's great because there is some element of safety that goes along with it. But I think as a driver of a car, I think if they see that bit of information, it just changes how they're going to deal with the bike automatically. And, you know, that might be psychological, but it's just sort of like, oh, they can ride here as well. So my anger, I can dissipate it a little bit about having to get stuck behind a bicyclist.
Yeah, it's almost like education plus an amenity.
Yeah.
You know, it's education in two ways. It's for the bicyclist. Hey, you could ride here. You don't have to ride in the door zone. You are entitled to be far enough away from opening car doors. That's good. Mm. But then it's also education for the high driver saying, you know, like, okay, well, yeah, bicycle can be here. And it's not like I'm not going to get angry.
Yeah, I think it's also more effective than the share the road signs, because I think a lot of cars assume that sign is intended for cyclists. And I've actually, Santa Monica is actually, it's a nice place to ride with super wide streets, but the drivers are hostile.
Uh-huh.
And especially like them coming out of the hills over there and then north of Wilshire, they'll just run you over. And there's that sign everywhere,
so
and I always think about that.
They say, share the road, and maybe somebody's thinking, come on.
Yeah, share the road, get on the sidewalk.
Yeah, and it's also something that's peripheral, and after you see it so many times, they just don't even recognize it.
I notice stop signs if I'm driving a car, and that's pretty much it anymore. I don't, you know, I remember when I took driver's training, driving along, and the teacher goes, what'd that sign say back there? And I was just clueless, and he goes, always look at the signs. Always look at the signs.
See, I'm just the opposite. I've been riding a bike so long that when I get in the car, I drive my car like I'm riding a bike. Even down to taking the routes that I would usually take on a bike that suck in a car.
And when you pass cars, you kind of...
Yeah, exactly. Looking through the intersection for cars and just ignoring that it's
when you come up to a traffic light that you do stop at, do you have like... do you, like, pull the car up in the crosswalk kind of sideways?
That's a pretty strange thing subconsciously that I was like, what the hell did I do that for?
You know, I wanted to ask you this, Paul, since this is somewhat on subject, but you've actually gotten a couple of, what they call, describe them as a moving violation with the city, you know, some of our group rides.
Recently.
All on a bicycle, yeah.
And I brought it up because I remember asking you and saying, like, I think this goes on your driving record.
Don't think so, because so far I've beaten them all.
Yeah, nice.
Last Tuesday, I believe, or Thursday, it was after we were riding in Cub Camp down to Hermosa and back as our weekly fast-paced ride that leads us out of the microwave. And it was 1 o'clock in the morning on Main Street, and there was a red light. And there was an officer sitting right there. So I just got through reading the chapter in Bicycling Law this Bicycling Law book that about the ability to run a red light when it's inoperative. So I tested this that night. I went through the light, and I knew he was going to pull me over, and we basically had a little, he didn't give me a ticket. He was kind of cool about it, but he was insisting that there was no exception to the law that a cyclist can't run a stop sign, and there is in every state. And I told him, well, give me your email address, and I'll send it to you tomorrow. And he did. He gave me his email address, and I sent him a link to the actual vehicle code and the page in the book. And he emailed me back and almost accepted that he was wrong, but not totally. He didn't want to admit that he was wrong.
Do we have that email address now?
His email address?
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
All right.
Yeah, I could forward you the actual email if you want.
that actually would be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, he gave me a pretty long response about how he's just looking out for me and my family and my safety, and just kind of went overboard on the "I'm a cop, you do what I say" stuff. He even went as far as in his email to tell me that he kind of changed the subject to what we were talking about to a car could have came flying out of a parking lot somewhere down the road and run you over. That's why it stopped you. He kind of like ignored the fact that he pulled me over for something that I'm allowed to do.
And this was 1 a.m?
This was 1 a.m. There wasn't a car on the road.
No traffic?
No traffic at all.
That was actually something that we had a speaker on a couple weeks ago talking about, cyclists being pulled over in discriminately based on the fact that they're cyclists and the relation to tickets that are handed out, things like bicycle license. There have been a lot of crackdowns on bicycle lights, and they're even cracking down now, I've noticed a lot, on the braking rule, which is fairly ambiguous, to say the
exactly.
least.
Exactly. Actually, that's something I'd looked into recently, too. I was riding again on Main Street, and a motorcycle cop pulled up beside me and basically said, "You don't have a brake." And I'm all, "Sure I do. I ride a fixed gear without brakes." But
this is Santa Monica?
Santa Monica Police. And I quickly explained to him that my interpretation of the law is that it doesn't have to be an actual device. The brake wheel just has to be able to skid on dry pavement for 15 feet, I think it is.
That's exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and I explained to him, he goes, "No, you have to have a brake." He wasn't even going to listen to me, but luckily I was leaving Santa Monica as we were having this conversation, so he couldn't go any further.
You want to just say like who
we
are,
do
who
have
we're
once again, this is Kill Radio, killradio.org. You're listening to Bike Talk,
and we're going
to
be podcast from KPFK starting later
and
this week.
Yeah, we are going to be podcast from KPFK starting later this week. We are talking to you right now from the Biker Wave. We're expecting a call in the next couple minutes here from a fellow named Ryan Bowen, who's in the middle of riding cross-country to the Obama inauguration. And I know last weekend he was doing a fundraiser and was doing massages, I believe.
Massage-a-thon.
That sounds great.
Raise money.
Going cross-country. And he'll be calling in a little bit, and also I think we're going to have somebody calling from Adventure Cycling Association with one of the map planners who actually puts together the routes and I know there are at least 3 tiers, the northern, southern, and the 76 route that they have that go cross-country, including the north-to-south route over the Great Divide. So they'll be calling us in a little bit.
Right now?
Actually, maybe even right now.
I'm calling right now. Okay. Oh, wait, no.
So, but once again, we're here at the Biker Wave in Santa Monica. We've got a few of the founding members and some of the folks from out here. That you guys do have, speaking of adventure cycling, you guys have a Pacific Coast route that runs right through your backyard, pretty much, or front yard.
That's a fun route.
Yeah, and now there's been a lot of controversy about this route, especially along the PCH where they're doing a lot of construction. Do you guys know anything about that?
I just rode a PCH. I only went to Malibu last weekend, and I didn't see anything on that stretch. Everything was clear.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I did a tour from San Francisco to Los Angeles at the end of September, early October, and there's lots of potential spots along there to get into close calls with vehicles, but the absolutely scariest portion of the trip was about 8 miles north of Santa Monica, where a city bus, an LA city bus, came by and was coming around a corner and missed my panniers by about, I don't know, like 8 inches. It just kept getting closer and closer and closer. And it's, to me, like, you don't want to be up there on a Thursday, because Thursday's trash day. And apparently it's against the law, but they do this on Venice Boulevard as well. You're not supposed to put your trash cans into the bike lane, but everyone does. But they do that up there as well. So the bike lane is basically completely obstructed with these big, you know, industrial plastic trash bins. And so it's, you know, you're in this suicide run there, because it's just, people are in such a hurry to get down that street.
Have you guys noticed a huge increase in cycling since even the past 2 years in Santa Monica?
Definitely. There's a lot more bikes on the road.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's amazing. I pretty much, like I said, even from myself, I think it's just blown up. I'm from Santa Cruz, and I did a critical mass in San Francisco in the 90s, and then started here in Santa Monica and then LA about 3 years ago, I guess. And I, like I said, I was only mountain biking. I actually had an aversion to riding on the road. I definitely thought it wasn't safe. And I wouldn't ride on PCH, you know, but I started riding, and I commute whenever I can on my bike, and I got a GPS, and I love it, because in the very beginning, like when I met Paul and the others, it was like I became educated, and I became empowered to ride on the streets, but then I was realizing that I was like, okay, it's dangerous as hell, especially at rush hour, if I try to get out on Olympic and Pico, so I just started, you know, getting off those streets, and it just totally changes everything. You can totally ride across LA without even being on any of these big streets, in my opinion. So, but I've definitely noticed a larger quantity of people that are commuting and riding around on bikes. And unfortunately, with that though, I always look at bicyclists, and I just see so many constantly that don't have lights on, and that to me is like one of the helmets, lights. I just, you know, I can't believe it, but you know, it's definitely blown up.
Okay. We had a spirited discussion about that for sure just the other week as well. So once again, I'd like to put a challenge out there to anyone who wants to design a system that lets us program our routes into it and then judge the best routes. I think that'd be awesome. So okay.
That does kind of there. That's kind of highlights the issue between the two types of cycling, vehicular cycling and route planning cycling, or is that the name of it, alternative route planning?
I don't even know too much about that. I got a couple of nuggets of information, but this is Alex. They'll take you farther away from. I want you to keep talking and not worry about the term.
Yeah, I mean, there's like I know League of American Bicyclists teach vehicular cycling, which would, you know, teach you to get out to the left, far away from away from the door zone. But then there's also people, I know, I don't want to speak for them, but organizations like Cycle, CICLE, talk about also, you know, maybe not necessarily, you know, buying into that or adopting that kind of cycling method, because maybe some people aren't qualified to do that.
Morgan, we'll come back to that in just a second. Right now we've got, I think, Ryan Bowen on the phone here. And
yes.
Ryan, can you hear me?
Ryan, can you hear us?
Hey there.
How you doing? Where are you at?
I'm doing well, Nick. I'm calling you right now from the Alpine, California Public Library. So I'm in the hills east of San Diego in Alpine.
Okay, how's your trip going so far?
It's been good. Getting up here was pretty tough. From the ocean beach piers where I started yesterday. Came up 40 miles all uphill, so I was pretty beat by the end of last night. Got to bed at about 9 p.m., but overall, the trip's been going well. I left L.A. with a little bit of hoopla that put on the Channel 4 News, KTLA, the NBC affiliate, and it was pretty exciting to hear from people that, hey, we saw you for the 6 p.m. news already, day one.
That was great. I know Nick joined you for that kickoff. One of the questions, later on, by the way, we just mentioned before you came on that later on we're going to have a guest from Adventure Cycling, and I know you worked with them to plan the route. But we'll get into that perhaps later. But at the very start, I just wanted to kind of know, like, how are you holding up? I mean, this is a big, new amount of biking to do every single day. How's your body holding up?
Yeah, that's been the number one concern, mentally and psychologically is one thing, but the body definitely can say other things. So right now I've been dealing with some knee discomfort. I'd say that's been the only major thing that's been consistent is not really inflammation, but what a friend who's a physical therapist has told me is that I have some like onset tendonitis in my right knee. So dealing with that and trying to ice every night is something that's pretty vital.
Is it behind your knee or on the side?
You know, it's not totally debilitating, but the amount of discomfort that I've been feeling, some pain, you know, needs to be dealt with, and it's gonna be really hard to get enough recovery time to be pushing over 80 miles a day.
Yeah.
With no breaks. So that's where I'm at right now, is trying to figure out the best way that I can possibly recover my muscles, and especially the tendons, because the muscles will tend to heal much faster than any tendon.
Right.
So that's where I'm at. I'm trying to deal with a little bit of discomfort, but overall my spirits are up. One of the things that I'm out there looking for this weekend is if it's worth it to invest in a, what they call a Sten machine, which is like a muscle stimulator.
Uh-huh.
And that's what one of my buddies had recommended. He's a physical therapist outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
And he suggested that that might be one of the best ways that I could recover. So making that investment is something that I might do, the $100 to $200 that one of those machines costs. If it makes, if it means the difference of making it all the way across the country or not, I definitely want to invest in that.
Yeah. Actually, it sounded like there was one of the Microwave volunteers here who knows a little something about knees. He had a question for you.
Yeah, I was just wondering if the pain was behind your knee or in the front.
No, the pain is, if you know anatomy, it's off of my vastus medialis, the inner quad.
Oh, okay.
And so it's on the upper side. And, that's the first thing we did is kind of deal with, you know, is it ACL or what kind of bike injuries then generally come from the knees. And patella tendonitis would be below the knee. But what I have is off of my inner upper, I guess you could say, which is the superior end of the patella on the vastus medialis side, the medial side. That's where most of the discomfort is coming from.
Ryan, are you riding clipless pedals, or are you riding with toe clips or flat pedals?
I'm riding with some mountain bike pedals. They're clip-ins.
One of the things you may want to try doing is adjusting your cleat. So that you're either toe in or toe out away from your cranks. And then the other thing that you may want to do is try using a washer on the bottom side of your cleat on the inside bolt, so that way you can actually, you can get some tilt to it, so that your legs, your feet aren't exactly flat. They're a little rotated. But I would try playing with the cleats first a little bit.
Really?
This is some highly technical.
Okay, you're saying that one of the best ways of dealing with that inner inflammation, that inner soreness, is by raising it up on the inner cleat?
There are different theories on this, but yeah, there are plates by LeMond and by a couple other companies that actually fit underneath the cleat that act like a wedge. And there are a couple other things that you can do, but I would suggest, if you're out in the middle of nowhere, starting out first, just playing with cleat adjustment.
Okay, I'll definitely do that. I know when I get to Phoenix, I'm planning on linking up with a guy who lit up my website. He's a bike coach, so I was going to go ahead and get a hold of him. Maybe he has some more advice. But I'm an open sponge right now, trying to get as much advice for how to deal with this discomfort as possible, because I know that if it stays inflamed and it gets worse, there's no way I'll be able to continue, you know, past Texas. At this rate.
Hey, Ryan.
At the speed that I'm going.
What kind of bike are you riding?
I'm riding a Trek 1500. It was donated by a friend, Jervis.
Yeah.
A cool connection with Steven, and this guy had an extra bike. So it's a Trek with a carbon fiber front fork, and I got a rear rack and a rack bag and some kind of smaller panniers on it.
Right on. Are you just sleeping on the side of the road every night, or are you staying in hotels, motels?
Last night, I camped. I got a couple friends who came up and joined me. My friend Albert, who's filming part of the trip, and another friend from college, from Occidental, Jasmine, and they followed me up. They came out from L.A. to San Diego yesterday, and then when I got into the hills, they reunited with me at the campsite. So we're going to be camping again tonight, and then after tomorrow, actually, they're turning back, and I won't be reunited with the support vehicle till after Christmas. So I have to pick up some tents, one tent, a small tent, and a sleeping bag. So that's something that I'm out there looking for when I get to Phoenix Monday, Tuesday.
Well, how's the weather out there? You're taking the southern route, correct?
Yeah, I'm taking the southern tier route. It's really nice. It's beautiful today in the hills. I know that I got to take advantage of all the sun I can get, because I don't know if it's going to last too much longer as I'm at knee. But it's about 75, I would say 80, because we're pretty close to the coast still. But it's beautiful up in the hills out here. The sun sets and the sun rises. I got to see both of them, and they're both take my breath away.
Are you planning on getting a warm shower every night? Because that's when I was touring, that's the one thing I always look forward to, if I can get it in.
Yeah. I guess I haven't been on the tour long enough to be soaking up every chance I got. I should have taken one this morning, but I figured I'll get one tonight. I know when I'm on my own, because right now I am semi-supported with the vehicle.
Oh, really? Okay.
But when I am totally on my own after tomorrow, I will be seeking as many warm comforts as possible.
Yeah. The warm shower, part of the reason I wrote it down here was I know there's a website you can go to, I don't know if you're familiar with, where you can hook up with free places to stay that are offered for bicyclists who are traveling.
Yeah, I've checked it out. It's called warmshowers.com, .org. I can't remember. I know I have it saved in my favorite. And I believe it's warmshowers.com. And there's a bunch of cyclists that offer free housing to other cyclists as they're on their tours. So what I wanted to do is these first couple of days that I know I'm going to have the car support, just kind of rely on that in the tent and get everything logistically prepared for the rest of the trip when I get to Phoenix. So as for Phoenix on, I don't really have anywhere to stay. I know I'm covered till I get there. But after that, I'll be using warmshowers.com and I know of another site, couchsurfing.com, that I'm checking into, as well as people who have just expressed support and that they know people throughout Las Cruces, New Mexico, and Austin, Texas. So that's where I've met people so far.
You know, one thing I just want to not forget to mention is you've got a pretty great daily blog you're doing and a website that has all kinds of stuff, including the route and other interesting stuff. So feel free to, you know, mention that. I guess it's biking.
Yeah, well, definitely. Make sure that one of the best ways of staying informed about this trip has been the website that we put together. Myself and I got a web guy who's a lot better at web design than me. But he set it up so that I could be uploading blogs and pictures as much as possible. And so that's at www.bikingforobama.com.
What'd you do now?
Sorry, I was at local Alpine Fire Department out this morning.
Yeah. You know, it just strikes me, maybe you've had some sort of adventure or some, I don't know, meeting, chance thing that happened. This is your chance to tell us about some, I don't know, local color or something that happened.
One of the, I'd say, a couple of kind of quick memories that I got so far is the first night in San Diego, I stayed at the Miramar Air Force Base with a buddy from high school named Luke, and he's a sergeant over there, and I got to speak with some more of the Marines in the area. And I guess there's an emergency going on in Alpine. You got sirens everywhere. I'm a tracker besides that. But I stayed at the Air Force Base with the Marines and got to have a couple conversations with them. And it really surprised me how little many of them knew about current politics or foreign affairs. That was something that I talked with the next night with a guy that I met at a sandwich shop who offered me a place to stay. That's one thing that he commented on, is that a lot of the guys on the base that he works with don't really know too much about what's going on in the world. They just know that it's their duty to serve wherever they're told to go.
Yeah.
So I found those two instances really interesting, to know that there are some good-hearted guys out there that are, you know, hopefully with this new election, one of the things that they express is that, you know, they'll be serving, you know, a higher purpose than what may have gone on in the past. So hopefully, if and when we do go into places of combat where their services are needed, it'll be for a higher cause.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that they express and that I hope for them.
Yeah. Well, any other questions, I'm wondering?
I'm Steve. I recently did a tour, and I certainly had experiences, mechanical experiences and bike-related experiences. I wonder, it sounds like you're kind of early in your trip so far, but I'm wondering if you're already sort of putting together a little checklist of stuff that you would do differently or you'd like to see changed or modified, things like that.
Yeah, well, one of the first big adjustments was getting used to having a little weight on the bike, having the rear bag with about 30 pounds of stuff in it. Really didn't look so big until I started to ride the bike. Now climbing these hills and just rolling around town, it handles very differently. So that's one adjustment, but that I'm not going to that I've just made in my riding style. But as for mechanical issues, yeah, I had my first one yesterday. I had my chain snap on me as I'm halfway up a big hill, climbing to about 2,500 feet. So I had to turn around and walk back into town to... I had a chain tool, but I had to learn how to use it. Some nice guys with the mountain bikers that I passed along the road ended up helping showing me how to use my chain tool that I couldn't figure out. It's like an all-in-one tool that I hadn't read all the instructions for in a rush. So I ended up getting that chain fixed, but I'm definitely going to pick up another chain just in case, you know, so I have the extra links. I got the oil and pretty much everything else I think I'll need. Barring a major disaster like a derailleur failure.
Did you bring spare spokes?
Spare spokes? No, I don't have any yet. Because my bike it's got kind of a strange spoke setup. They're not regular spokes.
Oh, they like some like especially ones that are designed specifically for the hubs and the wheels you have?
I believe so. And I have an extra set of wheels in the support car, but he's not gonna be here for the next 3 weeks, so you know that. Spare spokes might be something to look into if I can find some that fit. These ones are kind of a flattened look, yeah. Kind of like a sleek racing profile.
Right.
They're not a regular one.
Aero spokes. Yeah. So, it sounds like you're learning how to work on a bike in this trip as well.
A little bit. I had some previous lessons, I guess you could say, with the Bicycle Oven. I frequented there all last year. Anytime something would go wrong on my bike. So I learned how to true a wheel and many of the other simple things like changing a tire, fixing a flat, just the basic bike mechanics skills. I'm no expert mechanic yet, so definitely there's still many things that I need to learn.
So another thing that I was, because you're clearly with a cause in this trip, are you spreading the word? Are you talking about that? Is that part of your communication with the locals you're meeting, other bicyclists? What's the response?
Really well. Every time I go to a place, I try to be kind of a personal advertiser. I bring in my cards that just advertise the website, and people receive it really well. I've got some good clips on camera already. I'm excited to slap those on the website as soon as possible. Just people really excited about the idea. Even a lot of folks have been excited about Obama's inauguration. They think that this is a really cool idea to try to gather people's opinions about what's going on right now and apply them towards the documentary that I'm putting together.
Well, that's great.
Ryan, thanks for keeping us posted.
Yeah. We're,
definitely.
Yeah. We're hoping to check in now with... a person from the, what is it, Adventure Cycling, who I know you worked with. But we might let you go, but maybe you can just say a word or two about Adventure Cycling and how they helped you, and then we're going to be giving them a ring.
Yeah, I just really, upon getting into San Diego, that was the first stage of my Adventure Cycling maps, and so I've really enjoyed them so far. They're really accurate. They're awesome. If you do a bike tour, I mean, I don't really know if there's any other maps out there that could compare, because these are some of the best maps out there. I really like them, and they helped me out, getting me a discounted rate in the rush time that I had. So adventurecycling.org is a great resource for any bicycle tourist.
Great. Well, we'll let you get back to this big adventure of yours. It's so great to be able to check in with you, and we hope to be able to do it in future shows.
Most definitely. Until then, just check out www.bikingforobama.com. That's the best way to try to follow where I'm at. You can watch where I'm riding. Hopefully I'll have a GPS tracking device up there soon, so you can literally, moment by moment, see where I'm at.
Great.
That's the goal.
Great. Well, we're looking forward to it.
All right. You have a good one.
Yeah, you too, Ryan. See ya.
Once again, that was Ryan Bowen, www.bikingforobama.org. And you can keep track of his progress. He's doing a daily blog, and he is talking about GPS. We will be talking with somebody from Adventure Cycling in just a couple minutes. Right now we want to do a quick update. We're talking to you from the Bikerwave in Santa Monica. We do have a calendar list of events going on here. This Friday there is the All-City Toy Ride. It's going to be meeting at different locations all over the city, heading into downtown Olvera Street with a big party afterwards. Bring a toy, catch up with your local ride on down, and celebrate Christmas. Also, this Friday, that's Friday, December 12th. Also this Friday, there's going to be a benefit roller race, gold sprint race at Orange 20 for Jeremy Wormser, one of the LA Fix crew who lost his house in a fire, in the recent fires a month ago. So that's going to be $5. Come on down, race for some prizes. There are going to be prizes for the top three males and females. And then after that, they'll be joining the All-City Toy Ride as well. And then on Saturday, there's going to be the Midnight Express Ride coming out of Union Station, heading up into the hills of the Angeles Crest. Anything else going on here in Santa Monica that you guys want to let people know about, Paul or Steve?
I don't think there's anything going on in the next couple of weeks here besides like the usual monthly rides, Crank Mob, Santa Monica, Critical Mass.
You mentioned Cub Camp.
Cub Camp's more of a, it leaves from the bike wave every Thursday at 9 p.m. It's a faster paced ride, and we try to change it up every week to keep it fun. We have different, just make up a different route every week, and it's come out and do it every week, and you'll get in better shape.
That sounds awesome. You guys did meet at the, a lot of the folks here at the Biker Wave did meet at the Santa Monica Critical Mass. Is that still happening?
Yes, it happened last night.
Okay, so it is the first Friday?
It's the first Friday of every month.
Okay, I don't. Do you guys always meet at the same place at the same time?
Yes, always meet at the pier in Santa Monica, at the cannon on the top of the pier. The ride usually leaves around 7:15. Everybody starts gathering around 6:30. And it's a pretty mellow, it's a slow-paced ride just around downtown Santa Monica. Last night we actually rode up and down the beach. We had a couple police officers tailing us, and we played a little bit of cat and mouse with them. It was a lot of fun. And we just stuck around Santa Monica.
Well, not trying to cut this short. We'll come back to that in just a second here, Paul. But right now we've got Jim Sires on the phone from Adventure Cycling. Jim, where are you calling us from?
Missoula, Montana.
Missoula, Montana. That is the home of Adventure Cycling.
Grizzlies.
Yeah, go Grizzlies. How's the weather there, Jim?
Oh, it's a little cooler than where you are. But it's okay. It's probably about 30 degrees, so it's not too bad. Not the best biking weather, but we still do it.
Yeah, you guys have an excellent little community up there.
It is. It is. And great. Actually, it has great cycling all around, on dirt and on road.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you guys, Jim, you guys, Adventure Cycling has been putting together routes for years. The first one I know of was the 76 route, cross-country. How many different map sets do you guys do? How many different routes?
Overall, since 76, we have mapped out now 38,158 miles of routes in North America, mostly in the U.S., and then a few sneak into Canada, too. So they're mostly on road, but they're also, we have some dirt routes, too, including the longest mountain bike route in the world, which is along the Continental Divide from National Park all the way down to the New Mexico-Mexico border.
Now, the Banff National Park, is that at the top of Canada or at the bottom of Canada there?
It's closer to the south side of Canada. So, yeah, but we've done all sorts of routes. The epic ones like the Great Divide or the Trans Am, that's about a 4,200-mile route. But we've got a bunch of shorter ones, too. We have a loop, really nice loop in northern Vermont. We have one in southern Utah. That one's downloadable. Those are downloadable. We just did a great set of loops up in Washington State. The one we're working on right now will actually go from border to border. It's going to be a paved route. We're calling it Sierra Cascades. And it's going to run from Canada to Mexico through the Cascades and the Sierra Nevada.
That sounds awesome. That's amazing. You guys also do some guided tours, I understand. Where would I go to find out about that?
Yeah, we do guided tours all over North America, too. About half of them are self-contained, carry your own stuff, but you have a guide, you have somebody to help organize the ride. and then the other half are supported. We also do courses for if you want to learn how to travel by bike. I mean, for many people it's easy, they can just do it themselves, but some people like to take a course. We do that too. So, but yeah, the rides are great, and they tend to be lower end. They're not really fancy kind of rides, but even the supporter rides, it's mostly camping, but booth catered, your gear is carried, so you can just focus on the riding. And some of those are fantastic rides too. The self-contained rides, some of those go really long distances too. In fact, the first one will take off from near you, it'll be in San Diego, and it goes on our Southern Tier route, which takes you right across Texas and through Louisiana, and then you end up in St. Augustine, Florida. And that's the oldest, I think it's the oldest settled town in the U.S., St. Augustine, Florida, northern Florida. That's about 3,100 miles, and I think it takes a couple months.
I've ridden your Southern Tier, and I want to thank you guys a lot because you actually sent me maps. I started in the middle of winter, and I tried to do the 76 route, and you guys sent me maps to get me down along the Natchez Trace and connect with the Southern Tier. So
you know, you're like the third person I've talked to this month who had to get maps freighted to them right in the middle of their ride. So it's good to have these maps. The maps are good because they're not only the route, but you know, they have a lot of field notes on the back. They're constantly updated. They have the services that a traveling cyclist would look for, and so they're really different from a AAA map that you'd use for your car. It has all the information packed into one little map set, and it's on relatively tear-proof and waterproof material too. So,
yeah, they're awesome. Those are amazing.
So, you can check it all out. I don't know if you've mentioned our website, but there's tons of information available on that at adventurecycling.org.
So, Jim, what about the route network that's the largest in the world that you guys had a part in coming up with?
Yeah, well, we hope it'll be the largest in the world. Right now we have our own route network for adventure cycling, but the other thing that's happening around the globe is countries, and in some cases provinces and countries, say like Quebec, are creating national cycle networks. And they're a hybrid network of on roads, trails, and it's fantastic because, as we know, a good network really boosts ridership. It creates a lot more confidence and visibility in being able to ride. So the U.S. doesn't have an official route. Some states have state bicycle routes, but we thought it would be great to try and create an official system like this. So we partnered with an unlikely ally. It's called ASHTO, and probably nobody there knows ASHTO, but if you do, you can read a lot of transportation stuff. It's the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. It represents all the state departments of transportation like Caltrans. And for the most part, these agencies have been pretty car-oriented for 50 to 80 years, focused on interstate highway system, focused on state highways, moving cars. But we got them to be the sponsor of this project. And so what we did is worked with them for the last 4 years to come up with what we're calling a corridor plan. And it's a basic framework for the system. And now states and nonprofits and individuals can work on establishing interstate intercity routes all over the country. So now we're moving into the zone of making it happen. And already I think we have about 18 states that have contacted us. And I think California is one of them, to talk about how to do this. And we'll be visiting with some staff at Caltrans in a couple months. And we've got three states that are already cranking ahead on routes in Virginia and Florida and Michigan. So that's where we're at. And as you said, this could, if it all pans out and if we can build routes on all these different corridors that have been identified, we could easily have a network of over 50,000 miles. So that would be a fabulous thing to have, this national network with signage facilities all over the U.S.
Hey, Jim, this is Steve. I'm general manager here at the Bikerwave, and we used your maps on a trip I did from San Francisco to L.A., and they were great. They were really handy. And one of the riders had a GPS, and I'm wondering if there's any talk or it's in the works to sort of incorporate GPS waypoints for some of the locations, because we had some challenge on a 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. run down from Big Sur down to the camping spot we were looking for. And,
yeah.
And I'm just,
actually now GPS waypoints on all our maps. I don't know when you
We probably had a map that was just it was
they're on our maps now, and we have a lot of people that are also sending us more and more data. The other thing is that we had done all of our maps at Adventure Cycling using graphic software like freehand. Now we're beginning to transform them into a GIS, geographic information system based maps. So between that and the GPS waypoints, we'll have completely digital maps in the next couple of years. But right now you can get GPS waypoints right on the map.
That's great. I think that's a wonderful move.
We keep wondering, I don't know what you guys think, we keep wondering, you know, what will be the future of maps on bikes, and the question is, will there always be a need for paper maps? So far, everybody tells us yes, because they're just cheaper, they're easier to thrash around, and also, if your battery runs out on your GPS wayfinder or whatever you think, it's good to have the maps. But anyways, we keep looking at where the future is going to go, because obviously PDAs and everything are getting much better and much clearer. So, but we're trying to keep track of that. But in the meantime, we'll keep doing the paper maps too.
Hi, this is Paul Brunghetto. I'm a head mechanic at the Bikewave. I have another question about what you're talking about right now. I'm a former geospatial software developer, so I'm kind of familiar with mapping system. I was wondering if you ever plan to take that your electronic version of the map and put it online and create something interactive where cyclists that are on tour could actually click a spot on the map and just make notes of things that they notice for other cyclists to see in the future.
Well, that is the concept we've also been talking a lot about. I mean, basically, it'll just be like a wiki or something for maps, you know, on the road. And the question for us is, you know, how do you maintain it? How do you? There's also a lot of judgment calls on these things, you know.
Moderation.
And that's usually what we're having to balance between all the feedback we get from people. So when we think about being able to do quick notes or other things, or even alterations in maps, we're trying to figure out how to do that and make sure that people feel comfortable with the information they're getting. Right now, we do, on our maps, like if you go to a specific map, you can right now get addenda, and we try to keep those updated all the time with all the fresh information we're getting. It's not real time, but it's we try to keep it fairly close because, you know, especially with four-star season or construction season, you know, things can change and be quickly. So, but that's another thing. We'd love to talk with people like you because I think we're going to set up a team, kind of a volunteer team nationally soon to help us figure out the future of our maps. So if that interests you, you should get in touch with us.
Yeah, definitely. I've actually worked in the past. I've before Google Maps even was interactive, I was working on stuff with a travel company, and I'd actually created an application where you can dynamically click on the map and add notes, so I'd be very interested in collaborating with you guys on that.
Yeah, I think that would be a pretty natural thing to get to, but we're finding again that a lot of our riders are increasingly using GPS wayfinders, but then they keep a map too.
Definitely.
So they're doing both, and then the idea of being able to have that interactivity for sharing thoughts on the road would be great, too. I mean, right now, mostly what you see are journals and stuff where you can track it on a day-by-day basis. But it's not linked to a map.
Jim, for those not computer-oriented, you guys are still doing a magazine routinely, right?
We are. We also have, I think it's really the best bike travel magazine in the English language. We just wrote an article for Cyclotourisme, which is a French magazine for a couple hundred thousand people. But we have we're actually the biggest bike membership group in the U.S. We have about 45,000 members, and images and articles, and it's written by cyclists for cyclists. It's nothing snazzy or it's not a glitzy magazine, and I think that's what people really like. I mean, it's a well-done magazine, but so it comes out 9 times a year, and you get that with a membership at Adventure Cycling, and if you're a member, you also get discounts on our maps. In fact, if you buy a map set, it typically just pays for itself by getting a membership, and you're able to go on our tours, too. So, again, on adventurecycling.org, you can check it out. And then the other good thing about all this is that our members basically help support all this program work for bicycling. So U.S. Bike Route System, all the work that's gone into that has been supported by our members. And then the other big thing that I don't know how much you guys have talked about on your show, but that's really going to be hitting big time in the coming year or 2 years probably, is the reauthorization of the federal transportation bill.
Yep.
And I'm going to go to Washington next week because we have a coalition called America Bikes.
Yep.
And there are eight groups, I think, now as part of it, including the League of American Bicyclists, Adventure Cycling, Rails and Trails Conservancy, Bikes Belong, a number of other groups. And we're there to advocate for making sure that good policies and more resources get put in that bill for bicycling. So,
Jim, thanks a lot. That is actually something that we've briefly mentioned, but that is a really good point. And I know that Rails to Trails did recently finish a huge advocacy program outline, and I had heard there was some cooperation with you guys on that.
Yeah. Well, and California's going to be really important, too. Obviously, you know, you got a big population, a lot of representatives who will be voting on that bill, but Senator Boxer is the chairperson of the Environment and Public Works Committee in the Senate, and they'll be the lead on the Senate side in crafting the bill. So she'll need to hear from all of you she'll need that advice on how to make it a better bill for biking. And she's generally been supportive of biking, but we really want to push for a lot more resources faster, because bike facilities are fairly cheap compared to car facilities. We can get a lot more mileage out of our investments, we think. So,
yeah.
That's coming up, too. So our members at Adventure Cycling, you know, help support our staff, that helps do all that work, too, with the other groups, Ash Point.
That's awesome. Also, I've noted, so if I stop by Missoula, is it okay for me to stop by your shop and check out your museum?
Absolutely. Not so much a museum, but it's actually a very cool building right in downtown Missoula. We have a thriving little downtown. And it's a former church that we're in, and when you walk into it, it feels a little bit like a lot of people call it the Mecca for bike travel, and we have all sorts of bikes and other things from veteran bike travelers. If you ride in and visit us, we'll happily host you and you know, give you some free ice cream or something like that. We have internet access, and so we have a complete rider's lounge for people who are visiting. And usually, I think every summer, spring, summer, fall, we have about 500-600 people that have ridden through. Plus, we have many other visitors who are driving through or in town, just want to come over and visit. So it's terrific. You'll meet all sorts of people if you ride in.
Steve, you have a question?
Yeah, hey, Jim. It was actually in Missoula. I'm from Bozeman, so... It was in Missoula that I sort of discovered a bike co-op for the first time. And you've got a pretty good one there in that town as well.
We do. Yeah, in fact, they just had a big party last night called Missoula Freecycle.
Wow.
And, great outfit. We actually have a lot of bike shops for a town our size. I think we have 5 bike shops plus the co-op.
Yeah.
Plus Adventure Cycling.
You definitely seem to be like the bike city in the state of Montana.
Yeah, although we're trying to make it better. We're like everywhere. We have gaps in our network. But it's a pretty good city for biking. You know, we're surrounded by mountains, but basically all the things you need to do are on flat terrain, and they're fairly, fairly close together.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are things going there for you guys? You feel like you're making a lot of progress in Southern California? I know I've talked with the L.A. County Bike Coalition and a number of other groups, but... Is it feeling like you guys are making good progress there?
Well, just like the federal
the federal bill that's coming out, we are revising our whole master plan here as well, and we're starting. We've got a lot of community support, so we're starting to make inroads. Do you have something that you wanted to add here?
Here, at least on the west side, we're still sort of new, so I'd say that we're doing very well. We're paying our bills and trying as hard as we can to get more people involved and keep bikes on the road here at the Microwave.
And as far as
the best weather for it, that's all I can say.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, it's another beautiful.
I used to ride all the time on the bike path, you know, between like Palos Verdes and you know Santa Monica and in town too. But I think it's only going to go up and up and up. And that's the exciting thing is that the U.S. bike route system that we talked about is going to be, I think, the connective tissue to all these fantastic local networks. Because really, when it comes down to it, most people are just going to bike a few miles. They're not going to bike across the country or even 100 miles. But the great thing is to have a complete interconnected system nationally. That's really our objective, is to have great, you know, city networks. Because originally, adventure cycling, we would avoid cities on our routes. You know, you'd be riding across the country, and then, you know, you'd be coming near Chicago and trying to take you around Chicago. And to me, that's terrible because I love cities. And especially if you've been on the road out in rural areas for weeks, it's probably fun to go to a city and eat some different food, see some different things. But, you know, they didn't feel like it was safe. But now I think with all these new urban networks coming into play, we'll get that combination of cross-country routes along with great urban networks, and I think we can have the best of all worlds.
One thing that we're going to try next summer here that, that a few people and I have been discussing, we're going to organize a group bike ride from San Francisco to L.A. There's many of those, of course, but this one is basically going to be free, and anybody can just show up and go. And we're just going to try to get like maybe 25 to 50 people together and just ride from, our first trip will be from San Francisco to L.A. and camp along the way and try to do it completely.
The route that we sell is a Pacific Coast route,
mm-hmm.
from Vancouver to Imperial Beach. And it was funny because just a few weeks ago, my 12-year-old daughter said that she wanted to ride across the country out of the blue. I hadn't pushed her at all. But I'm actually thinking maybe we'll start by doing some of that coastal route and maybe catching a train back. But that felt like an awesome trip.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. One thing we're going to try to do is I've actually done it before by myself solo and found a lot of cool places to camp that were kind of off the beaten path, so we're going to try to hit those places with a big group of people.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, you know, one thing I like about our tours is they're fairly small. I mean, it's kind of fun to go on really big rides. I don't know, having the 10, 25, 40, or 50 people that you're talking about, it's not a bad size. Just get some good visibility for yourself on the road.
Exactly.
Jim, I just want to say...
You can all fit in the campground.
Yeah. Jim?
But that's great. That sounds wonderful. And again, I just encourage people... you know, what's really interesting, too, for us is, you know, everybody's always trying to segment bicyclists, but I think, again, there's this whole spectrum of experience from, you know, riding to your grocery store all the way to doing an overnight bike trip. And we really encourage people to just do a one-night trip. It's not that hard. If you just throw a backpack on your back and ride 15 miles out of town to a campground or a B&B, whatever you want, but just go for one night, just that quick getaway.
Yeah, especially around here and Southern California, you can basically throw a pack on your bike and ride up to Leo Carrillo off PCH.
Yeah.
It's
exactly.
It's very, very convenient.
So that's we try and encourage people to get out there for one night, two nights, and ride on a bike.
Jim, we really appreciate your advocacy and your help and actually everything Adventure Cycling has done and is continuing to do for our community.
You're welcome.
AdventureCycling.org, I think, is what it is.
AdventureCycling.org.
All right. And thanks a whole lot for the call. And
you're really welcome. One other thing, quickly, is if you want, as I say, you can join Adventure Cycling, but also another thing people get, and you don't have to be a member, is a biweekly little e-newsletter called Bike Bits that we send out that covers bike travel. And it's text only, it's really fast, it's a fun read, and you can sign up for that from the website, too.
Thank you very much. I do know that, like, you guys do hook up people who are trying to
join together and do tours together. So
yeah, we have a number of features on the web and in the magazine too, Companions Wanted, so you can mix and match and see if you can find somebody to ride right where you're going.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Jim.
Good luck in your work down there.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jim.
See you.
I just realized, Paul, are you the, I don't know if I'm supposed to say it, but are you a freeway rider organizer?
I've ridden on the freeways a few times.
Can we talk? Who? Yeah? Can we say names? Or?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you can say my name.
Okay, Paul, Morgan, you want to tell us a little bit about the freeway rides? Because I thought that was pretty interesting. They ride on the freeways at rush hour.
We ride on the freeways. Another member of Santa Monica Critical Mass, and I think kind of Paul and Alex Thompson. And
it was just a like a little discussion. We used to always kind of joke about it, and Alex Cantanaro actually drove it.
And myself.
Yeah.
There you go. We rode it, actually.
Are you guys criminals?
No.
The group, criminals.
Criminals.
Yeah, Alex and I organized the first couple rides, and Paul was involved with it, and I don't know. It's kind of like the, I don't know, we're like not affiliated with anything, any one cause, or everybody came to it with their own principles and ideals and rode the freeway under their own banner, and just to keep it free from any one mission statement, other than trying not to get hurt.
Yeah, and actually the getting hurt part, it was surprisingly very, very safe out there. It's like riding in a parking lot, and a lot of fun. And the reaction from the drivers was very interesting too. So it was like 90% of the people would just kind of look up at you and go back to what they were doing, and maybe the other 10% would wave or something. But it was kind of surreal being out there on the freeway in rush hour traffic.
You guys usually pick a time of day and check the traffic to make sure that you're heading out there at a time when it's pretty dead.
Definitely, yeah.
5:30, 6 p.m. rush hour on a Friday is usually when we've always done it.
And there has been occasions where we've actually had to change the route at the last minute because the traffic was moving too fast on the freeway. So we just rode a couple miles and found a traffic jam, which isn't hard to do in L.A.
No, it was called the 405, and I'm so glad I got to do it. It was fun.
There was a Santa Monica Critical Mass ride a couple of months ago, maybe a month and a half ago one night. And we got near the 10 freeway overpass on Lincoln, and we saw that it was pretty jammed up, and we sort of regrouped and sort of hived. And then
was that the night when there was an accident?
Yeah,
on the freeway,
and there was an accident.
The Highway Patrol and Santa Monica Police down on the freeway, and as we rode by, we were all screaming different things. And
Paul had a megaphone.
Was that the night I had the megaphone?
Yeah.
As
he was passing the cops, he screamed out, "Holy shit, there's bikes on the freeway."
I think I was saying something like, "This is crazy, I can't believe this is happening." And the police were just looking at us like, "What?"
Yeah, that was what was challenging about that is like initially we're going through this parking lot of cars, and then we get to the accident, and suddenly there's this freeway opening stream where the bottleneck of vehicles is accelerating as fast as they can, and we're like in the middle of that. So it got a little scary.
Yeah, we had initially intended to ride on the shoulder just to be safe, and when we got close enough, we saw there were cops in the shoulder. And so we had to go all the way to the left. So getting back to the right on a free, open, wide freeway was fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah, there was actually one time I was, this wasn't planned at all. I was riding, I was on the freeway rides, I always had a camera mounted to the front of my bike. And one day I was riding over to a friend's house over in Culver City, I think I was on Sentinella. And I was cut off by a bus, and then I got cut off by a car, and I looked at the freeway, and I was like, if I could go on the freeway, I'd make it there in half the time, so I did. And it wasn't really rush hour traffic, but I just rode along the shoulder all the way to Overland and got to my destination in like 5 minutes and never even interacted with the car. It was great.
Is there video of that?
And there's video of that.
Where's the video?
It's on YouTube.
Where
you can probably just Google, search for freeway ride, and there's probably about 10 different videos that'll show up. There's actually been some in other cities, too, recently.
Cool. So how can we get in touch with you if we want to do a freeway ride? Is that possible?
Yes. We haven't organized it. Anybody can do one. Just be safe. But you can email crimanimal@gmail.com.
Yeah, there's also a website, crimanimalswithaz.com.
And there's an email on that, yeah.
All right, well, we have a couple things that we want to do before we finish. I think Jim might want to say something. Then we got my dad here. He's going to talk about something. And then we got Stephen Box calling in, and we also got to talk about what Bike Wave's doing. So here's Jim.
This is Jim. Just wanted to – I've actually got to take off, got to ride back into Los Angeles, but it's been great visiting out here in Santa Monica. This is an incredible space that you guys have here at the Biker Wave and a really great resource. Also, it's been great talking with the guys from Adventure Cycling. They've done a whole lot for the cycling community nationwide, and it's just been a blast. Hopefully, I'll talk to you guys next week. You guys have a good time here.
Thanks.
See you later.
Thank you.
All right, Dad, you want to say
if this were a party, I represent the conservative wing of the party versus guys that would go on a freeway with their bikes. I'm in the opposite direction. I discovered things about, I've been biking since my grandfather strong-armed a bunch of people to buy subscriptions to the newspaper to get me a Schwinn with big balloons. And I went through cycling as an aspect all my life. And then for a while, my wife and I didn't even have a car. We only existed on our bikes in Santa Monica for maybe 3 or 4 years. And early on, you learn about the cops. I had one cop come up against me when I was going the reverse direction on the speedway, jumped out of a car, held up his gun, pointed, said, "Put down your kickstand." I said, "That's a gun in your hand, officer," etc. But one of the things that happened to me was my hip, as I aged, I got bad arthritis. And even now when I'm sitting here, just the short amount of time I've been here, I wasn't able to walk or anything, but I could still ride my bike. And up to the time I got into the hospital, 3 or 4 days, I was still riding my bike. And when I couldn't sit down right now, I can ride, and we can ride 90 minutes. And there's something to be said for the whole aspect of the politics of bike riding could change if the 77 million baby boomers now started to understand that here is something that they can do to keep them in top shape for years and years and years. And that will also have to do with designs of bicycles. I found out that my Trek was very unwieldy and scary, and I kept falling down. So I got another bike that had a lower center of gravity.
You just got a hip?
Yeah, I had a total hip transplant.
Yeah.
But and so, in a way, when I look at the design of my hip, it's similar to the design of the bicycle. And I think, wow, it's a kind of a prosthetic, if you look at it that way. And it's the long-distance aspects of it that I hear you guys talk about. And the speed is something that, when you get in your 60s, you can't imagine that could happen. But it could happen if you stay off the freeways, I suppose. But if you get to live this long, and you have the disintegration of bones, and you suddenly say, wow, here's technology that can strengthen all the rest of my body. Because what I found out going in for the operation and stuff, that even though I didn't have a hip joint, I still had other limbs that were strong, kept together by bicycling. And then there's this aspect of lower to the ground. The older people, when you get on a bike that's thin like that, it feels like you lose your balance. I kept falling down. So lower to the gravity. So I just want to put in a word for the fact that if the middle America started to realize that, yeah, you get on your bike to go to the store, more of that will happen. Just most of the trips by cars in America are short. And when you discover the alleyways and the different ways of moving on Santa Monica, as we have discovered, and how you can buy your groceries on your bike, etc., millions more people may find it beneficial to do cycling. And so that I would encourage by, you know, and technology, because there's also these marvelous new lithium-ion battery bicycles that have great seats for people like me, you see. So then all of our relatives, even our 75, 85-year-old parents can be riding bikes, even when they can't always walk. That's how I just want to make a statement about that.
Cool. Thanks, Dad. Thank you. That was word from my dad. And now we're going to go to Stephen Box if we can get him. Meanwhile, let's talk about what Bikeway is doing and talk about volunteers. Art? But can you come?
One of the things that you guys probably already touched on, I'm Art, by the way, currently the secretary of Bikerwave. Bikerwave is really a fairly new organization, fairly much a fledgling, very similar to Bike Kitchen and the Bike Oven in our mission statement and our desire to enable and enhance the bicycling community in Los Angeles and Santa Monica, especially the west side. But we're definitely looking for as many new volunteers as we can possibly get our hands on. If you have any inkling to tool on a bike or learn about tooling on your own bike or your friend's bikes if you're creative. And if you you don't even have to have an ability that is bike-centric or bike-related in order to be able to volunteer for the Bikerowave in a way that would benefit us. We need people who have inherent knowledge in computer IT tech stuff, bookkeeping, anybody who's familiar with operating a point-of-sale system.
Marketing.
People who like to do inventory. And all of these sorts of things. And we're obviously, we spoke very briefly about opening up more days. We currently only have 4 days, evenings mostly, that we're open during the week. And the more volunteers we get, the more days we'll be open, the more people we'll be able to affect and benefit on the west side. And I'm just putting out a call out to anybody who wants to come and volunteer. Jump on the website. It's www.bikerowave.org. We have a volunteer application on the front of the website you can click on and fill out. Please jump on the forum, sign up, give yourself a handle, and jump into the swimming pool there, and you'll find all kinds of interesting, crazy stuff. Paul, anything you want to add to that?
I think you covered everything.
And that's Bikerowave on the west side. Just to put in a nice word, the Bike Kitchen over in Hollywood, Heliotrope and Melrose, and over in Highland Park, the Bike Oven, a couple of other very similar related organizations.
I can ask you a question or two, Mark.
Go for it.
I have had significant exposure to the Bike Kitchen. I'm a big fan, and it's inspiring to see each of your organizations. And is it the case... I've actually also had exposure to Bikes Not Bombs, but you basically are about getting people to learn how to fix up a bike on their own with help and kind of be a more empowered rider. Do you do things like Earn a Bike program or like young people can... Anyway, I don't know much about your particular setup here. I know a lot about Bike Kitchen, but it's basically a do-it-yourself shop. It's really neat. There's bikes all over the walls in different stages of development. I think you could buy a frame and then begin to work on it with help. But do you have like stand time that you charge for? How does it work for a young person who isn't that big a bicyclist, but they heard about this place and they want to get a bike here?
There you can basically just walk in, and the stand time is $7 an hour. We do have, we make exceptions for people that obviously can't afford it, and we've actually had homeless people in here working on their bikes, not very often, but it does happen. As far as purchasing a part and a bike here, the same thing applies. If someone looks like they just can't afford something, we'll knock the price down so low that they can't afford it and teach them how to build it. That's kind of what we're here for.
Here's a question, too. You obviously probably welcome donations of bikes, maybe. There's all kinds of...
Very good.
A lot of these
point.
Are donations.
Yeah.
That pile over there is donations.
Nearly everything we get into our inventory, if you will, is either a donation from general public that comes in to drop off an old rusty hulk that's been in their backyard too long, or a dusty, partially working bicycle that's been in the garage or the attic. We have drawers and drawers full of used parts, and I'd say maybe only 10 or 15% of the parts and elements that we have that make up bicycles are new. Very few. So yes, we definitely welcome donations. We're working toward getting to a point where we have 501c3 status, awesome. So that if you had a large donation, we could give you a tax-deductible receipt. We're not there yet, but... I guess one of the things I didn't mention about Bikerowave, we're definitely all volunteer. Everyone who works here comes in, puts their time in. They do it out of the love of bicycling and out of some insane part of their brain, I suppose. But everyone does it all volunteer, and we're not for profit. Mm-hmm. So very recently formed cooperative in Santa Monica, but other than that, what would you say?
Well, I can ask you another question.
Sure. Sure.
I know that the Bike Kitchen has sort of become a sort of a hub from which folks emanate in every direction, and it's just a place people know they can go with any bike-related question, issue, hope to find a friend, a ride, anything. And it seems like you're on your way there. I know that the West Side is very different, sort of culture-wise, or has different elements than the East Side. One of the interesting cultures I notice, I volunteer on Sundays in Santa Monica, is this gigantic peloton of riders. It really compares to the... It's a different culture than you might find in downtown L.A., but it's maybe the sort of professional set or something. They've got spiffy spandex. Anyway, that's a big audience that I just wonder. Perhaps they've
Steve,
got...
Steve, Paul, you guys want to comment on that one?
We don't get a lot of the spandex types in here working on there. I mean, I'm
hardly ever.
Yeah. I think of, like, LaGrange, you know? There was a friend of mine who came in and he had a Mavic wheel set that requires a special Mavic-made spoke-adjusting tool. And we don't have that. And he actually went over to Helen's and they just gave him one. Mm-hmm. And he was going to leave it, but he apparently didn't for us. Mm-hmm. But we don't get a lot of, you know, really, really high-end stuff. And a lot of the times when people do come in and they've got a really kind of tricked-out bike, they generally don't need our help much. And they're just, they know exactly what to do. Mm-hmm. So it's... most of our, I would say, like I was saying earlier, the largest crowd that we get in here are probably, you know, younger people who have, you know, a bike that they've converted or some simple, it's their main mode of transportation, maybe they're a college student. We've got a couple of people, there's a woman, an older woman, Marilyn, who's on her third bike now, and she's pretty much a regular fixture here every Saturday, and she's been... truing wheels. She's like the wheel truing mistress.
Wow.
She's a remarkable example of somebody who keeps coming back and really taking advantage of her year membership.
Uh-huh. And what's our under 18 new member that you've recently advocated for membership?
Dylan.
Dylan.
Yeah, we've got a guy named Dylan who is really big on the West Side bicycling ride scene. And I think he's going to school right over here, if I'm not mistaken. At least his sister is. But he's come in to volunteer. We've had some high school students volunteering as well, and we teach him mechanical skills and have him hosting and doing work like that.
That's great.
So there's a very broad age range and I would say personality set of people that come in and volunteer at the Bikerwave. You get just about every sort. Mm-hmm. You mentioned professionals, business people. Yeah, definitely. Punk rockers, college people, sure.
That's great.
Socially, several of our people, our man of the year last year, Gern, he's famous for saying Bikerwave is better than TV.
Yeah, way all better.
Right. It's at that time, so let's just give a shout-out to everybody in the room. We got Steve... Bowers, we got Steve Madsen,
Paul Brigetta,
Art Slater,
Morgan Strauss,
Bill Richard,
Gretchen Richard,
Kwan,
Gern Trowbridge,
and I'm Nick Richard. That was Bike Talk for this week. We're going to go back to Eric Potter's show at the studio. So anybody have any sounds they want to make?
Woohoo! Cockpit!
Yeah. One little tiny mini correction, I think, is the website of a young man bicycling across the country is bikingforobama.com, I believe. We said .org before, but it's bikingforobama.com.
Okay. So, at the studio, Eric, Tim, you can switch it back.
Cool.
And we're out. We're done.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great. I was looking at you. Right.
the people.